Welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources on how to live a more courageous life. We'll be looking at men, the current state of masculinity, and how to create a more inspiring narrative for all men. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. Well, I had this great interview with Dr. Richard Boylan, and I was unsure if I should do this episode before or after I do the Secret Space Program episode, and can I do them back-to-back weeks? I'm not sure, but this one pushed its way forward into my awareness, so this is the one we're doing. As many of you know, I have had a deep interest and reverence for not only Native American heritage and spirituality, but also what they refer to as the Star People. These are extraterrestrial visitors that populate the myths of indigenous tribes the world over. Most people that know me do not know that I am 1/8 Chippewa Indian. My father's mother was half Chippewa. I also have long been interested in the ET phenomenon, having a particular affinity for the Pleiadians and their myths. The Pleiadians, according to this lore, are a race of ETs amongst many that have been assisting humanity since the beginning of our story. In my grandmother's people's lore, the Chippewa were seeded by the Pleiadians and were instructed by such by the Pleiadians themselves. The Native Americans and other indigenous tribes are brilliant at embedding truth into myth. This technique preserves information that would otherwise be lost or removed by authorities that do not want to see this knowledge shape our minds and our future. These powerful myths are what sustain humanity, whether that's the biblical myths, hero's journey mythology, or the myth of the Star People. It is our heartbeat and our light in the dark forest. My guest today is an elder in this community, a man who was trusted by the native tribes to help spread the word about the Star People. Let's go sit around the fire and listen to some words of wisdom. Enjoy. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Dr. Richard Boylan. Dr. Boylan is a clinical psychologist, cultural anthropologist, retired university professor, and a world-renowned researcher and expert on UFOs and extraterrestrial visitors. His career over 5 decades has centered in public service, first as a clergyman, then as a social worker and educator, and then with 3 graduate degrees doing decades of service as a clinical psychologist and an anthropologist studying visiting space civilizations. Here is my interview with Dr. Richard Boylan. All right, I am here with Dr. Richard Boylan, writer, researcher, expert on UFOs and star visitors. Been looking forward to chatting with you. Dr. Boylan, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
My pleasure, Tony. I'm glad to be here and really looking forward to our discussion.
Me too. You know, I was telling you before we started recording, I first became aware of you in a funny way. I was kind of searching for star people. You know, I have a Native American background, and I saw an email that had your name at the bottom, and it had all this great information about the star people of the indigenous tribes. And I saved it for years and years and years. It kind of sat. It was one of those emails that sat in my inbox, and I just didn't. I never wanted to move it. I just wanted it there, thinking someday I was going to need it. I had no idea when I did that I was someday going to have a podcast and I'd actually be talking to you, which I'm thrilled by. But that's how I first became aware of you. And I guess to start off with, I just wanted to ask you, like, how did you first become interested in ETs or UFOs? Like, did you have a personal experience? Like, what was your background? How did this become the topic really that you're really renowned for and an expert on? How did it start? How young were you maybe when you first got interested or first had an encounter of some sort? Like, give us a little bit of your background, where you grew up and what happened that had you be interested in UFOs and ETs and everything that followed.
Okay. Well, I'm an oldster. All right, Tony. So I've been around the planet for a long time. Since 1939. So, when the Roswell UFO crashed in 1947, I was 8 years old. Mm. So third grader. I remember my parents talking about that the afternoon newspaper had a story about Army recovers in disc. Then the next day, of course, the Army retracted it because they got their fingers slapped by the folks in Washington.
Yeah,
we're not talking about that sort of thing. So they pulled their press release back. But already in my young, impressionable child mind, I thought, wow, that's neat. There's other people in the universe besides us. I just thought it was an interesting fact. I'm young and still picking up lots of new facts every day. So that was one more.
Mm.
We fast forward from that. In 1952, there was increasing waves of UFO sightings over the country.
Yeah,
we'll forget about that now. It's that UFO, whatever you want to call it, swarm or mass event. People used to get excited, and they sit out in their lawn chairs after dinner and look up at the sky and hope they see a flying saucer, because that was a legitimate topic. The Robertson report came out from the CIA and said, this thing's getting out of control. It could serve national security harm because we might have people yawning when Russian bombers came over because they thought everything was a UFO.
Right.
So the government decided to make UFOs illegal to believe, and they turned up the disinformation propaganda efforts of the intelligence agencies to maximum volume. And ridiculing of people. Anybody who believes in a UFO is running around with color beanie hat on their head.
Yep.
That sort of thing. And so the popular following of UFOs simmered down as the CIA had intended it. However, not yours truly. I still thought that was fascinating. And I kept an open mind on it.
Richard, you make it sound like, too, like the general public maybe was more open-minded back then. Like they were. Yeah, I remember my grandparents talking about it, and we would sit out on the porch on a starry night, and they lived kind of out in the boonies. And it wasn't just looking for shooting stars. They were looking for, you know, flying saucers and all of that was kind of very matter of fact, if I remember right.
There were a handful of years there where it was legal to be interested in that stuff. Roswell kicked off, and the CIA didn't do their massive propaganda blitz until around 52, I think. So in those intervening years, people said, well, hell, if one fell down, maybe another one might too. I'll keep my eyes open.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really interesting. And that was, I think I remember, wasn't there a big one in LA too, around that time, like in the early 50s, like an LA sighting where everybody saw it, you know?
That was World War II.
Okay.
The UFO blitz, if some newspapers called it, over LA. What was happening is that LA, and I lived down there at that time, was on war alert because it was coastal, and across the sea was Japan, our enemy. And so one night, a UFO had the temerity to fly over the LA area where all the big searchlights of the military were aimed up at the sky, and they caught it and started shooting at it, and round after round of artillery shells went up in the air trying to bag that UFO like it was a large turkey.
Mm-hmm.
But, and the newspapers, you know, covered that story. What's the army doing, you know, shooting salvo after salvo of artillery shells up in the air? Or is it Japan attacking us again? What gives here?
Right.
Then, of course, the UFO suppression machinery came in. Military intelligence poo-pooed it and said, no, there's just a mistaken identity thing that the artillery were shooting at. But again, some people saw the UFO. It was a lighted object up there they were aiming for. And so the suppression wasn't 100% successful.
Right, right. How did you get interested in the Native American indigenous connection, which to me makes all the sense in the world? How did you start to find that there was all this mythology in these kind of ancient cultures or these indigenous cultures, and that they had their wisdom about the star people was not suppressed? They kept quiet about it and kept amongst themselves, but that's natural for a culture that's been, you know, beat down the way that they were in this country. But when I started to read like your article and started to click on some other things around it, I started to realize that the mythology around star people is in just about, I mean, it's widespread. The Dogon in Africa, almost every tribe in America shares this kind of history about the star people, that they've kind of kept, you know, their cards a little close to their chest. How did you first maybe start to make the connection that, hey, there might be some truth over in these indigenous tribes that connects to what I was seeing as a kid or what I was suspecting about Roswell? Or how did you make that connection? What was the impetus, or what had you start to look over in that area of the research?
Well, I'll give you a two-layer answer. Mm-hmm. I've always been drawn to and fascinated by Native American culture. When I was a little kid, my mother parked me and my brothers in some cowboy and Indian movies to get us out of her hair so she could have a little quiet for a while. I was always felt like rooting for the Indians. Seemed to me they yep. had the better position in the cowboy and Indian fights.
Yep.
So, you know, the cowboys were intruders and the Indians were just minding their own business on their land. So I favored that. And a little metaphysical side note, I've explored my previous incarnations, trying to figure out where this strong drive, feeling of attachment to and high interest in Native Americans comes from. And I picked up that I had previous incarnations as a Hopi and as a Zuni.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe that's something to do with it. But
yeah, that's not surprising. That's not surprising from what you're telling me about, that you would go and look at previous incarnations and that there would be something there. Did you...
But the big event was when Dakota Sioux Elder Standing Elk contacted me and said, I've been directed, he didn't quite say, but I know by inner direction, mm-hmm. spiritual guidance, if you will, to contact you, that you have information I'm supposed to get concerning some spiritual laws that the star people gave
the natives.
Well, it so happens, I was reading, in those days, I was reading UFO magazines with some regularity, and there was a feature in one that had these symbols and said, these are the symbols that the star people gave and for spiritual principles, 11 spiritual and 11. What should we say? Cosmic principles.
Mm-hmm.
And universal principles. And so I cut this article out, and I'm sure you don't believe everything is a coincidence.
No.
As I had that cut out and had it in my wallet, Daniel got a hold of me and said, I've been directed to contact you, and you have some symbols I'm supposed to get a hold of. At that time, these 1111 symbols, universal spiritual laws, were not in common circulation in American culture.
Right.
Other than that article, I had never seen them anywhere else, but I had them, and he said, I need to get them from you. So we arranged to get together, and I handed them over to him. I said, I'll take good care of them. This is my only copy, and they're really kind of special to me. But Chief Daniel, since you're directed to get them and use them for a good purpose, I gladly give them to you. So I did, and he was a happy camper. He drove off. And several months later, he called me and said, I'm inviting you to a special conference. Star Knowledge Conference at my reservation in Yankton, South Dakota. We're going to gather spiritual elders from all over the world, and we're going to get together and confer and see what every culture in the world has to say about these universal laws that, let's cut to the chase, that the Star people gave the Native Americans and indigenous people in other cultures.
Mm-hmm.
The Native Americans didn't have a copyright on them, but and so Star visitors visit people in all the indigenous cultures of the world. So we had, in 1996, we had the Star Knowledge Conference. It was amazing. There was a giant hall, and it was full of indigenous elders from every corner of the globe you could imagine, Asia, Africa, North and South, and Central America, Europe. Even the polar people, the Sami, so the Laplanders, if you will, who are actually extraterrestrial race that migrated here when their world was no longer habitable.
Mm.
All these indigenous peoples who are faithful to paying attention to when they're visited by Star visitors all came together, and everybody shared their individual cultures, experience, and knowledge of visits and what they got from these symbols. It was mind-blowing.
I am so jealous that I didn't get to attend this. This sounds like the greatest conference ever to me. Yeah.
People recorded it, but I've never seen a recording on television or anything since. You know, it's blockbuster.
There's never been any kind of follow-up. It was really just like this one-time gathering of the tribes, kind of gather all the tribes.
Yes, on that scale, yes. Daniel tried to hold some other our knowledge conferences to kind of reiterate to people who missed the first one what was said and share it, but they never had the bang of the first one, which elders, but never the whole auditorium.
Right. One of the things that I was curious to ask you too, Richard, was there, in my grandmother on my father's side is half Chippewa, and which is near Yankton, South Dakota, actually, the Plains Indian. They were rivals of the Sioux. So there's a lot of the mythology around the Plains Indians with the buffalo and all that stuff is also connected to my bloodline, basically. But I found out after digging into their mythology and following some rabbit holes about the ETs and the star people that there was, that the Chippewas had a mythology that that they were seeded by the Pleiadians, that there was such a strong connection that they were considered our family directly in the bloodline. And I was like, whoa, that's, and then I come to find out that other, you know, you mentioned earlier, there was a tribe that said they had come from ETs. And I wanted to ask you, like, was there a lot of that sort of information, or was that few and far between? Was there other races other than Pleiadians that were mentioned, such as, I don't know, the Syrians or the Arcturians or the Orions, like that? You hear a lot in different channelings and books. There's a million and one books, you know, and so you kind of cobble it all together. But I just wanted to ask you about specifically not just visitation, but this particular myth was saying that it was, they were what seeded the Chippewa tribe.
Yes. Well, all the Plains Indians going way back had been instructed by star people who mm-hmm. took on human form. The two major figures in that process were White Buffalo Calf Woman, at least that's the visage in which the Star Woman Mary came among the Plains Indians and elsewhere. In Central and South America, she called herself and appeared differently as Lady of Guadalupe.
Okay, yep.
Later among the Aztecs, well, similarly,
Quetzalcoatl, like the feathered serpent, that always seemed to be kind of connected maybe to an ET thing too, right?
That might
be something else too, but I always thought that they always acted like that was like a deity that was off planet, you know, the way they described.
That was a different star teacher that did.
Yeah.
Mary did not choose that characterization. There was a reptoid star visitor who took a human incarnation and did some teaching of Aztec and Mayans, and they remember him as Quetzalcoatl, or
and he was reptoid. He was a reptilian, perhaps.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Reptoid human.
Yep.
We've got a charming visual, which I thought a very good painting of what he was like talking to a Mayan in front of a temple. It was a mind-blowing image. But that stuff was going on. Our ancestors in various cultures were being instructed by visitors from the stars who laid down some important information on them and then went their way. And they remembered it because it was so striking. They were told it was so important.
It makes you think, like, almost all the advanced stuff, not that humans aren't capable of creating these systems and stuff, but it's like our history, it doesn't matter where you look in the world. I mean, if you go to Egypt, you have the pharaohs, and they the way that they look with this, you know, they also have like the serpent, you know, it sort of harkens to extraterrestrials, perhaps of different star systems or different tribes. I mean, I remember you probably read this or know well about it, but I remember reading that there was an African tribe, the Dogon, and they had advanced knowledge of Syrian, a Sirius B, that there was a second star system, not just Sirius A. It might be the other way around. I think it was A was the big one and B was the smaller one. And when astronomers first came across these, you know, so-called quote-unquote primitive people, they're like, oh, they think there's two star systems in Sirius. Ha, 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 these dumb primitives. Well, it turns out once the science caught up, they realized that they were right. And these indigenous people, the Dogon, were saying that we were told by the people from Syria, the Syrians themselves, the star people from Syrian, the Syrians were the ones that told us about the other star, that it was a binary star system. And so they were instructed by star people from there far before the scientists could confirm it. I always thought that was such an interesting story.
Yes, very much so. The Dogon and sort of reptoid looking, but this was a different species of extraterrestrial. They actually were aquatic. So they had to have a water, body of water in which they could operate, you know, maybe a swimming pool or something, you know. But they could teach from there, and the Dogon paid close attention to them and were very impressed with what they had to tell them. There are Nomos and Chitari teachers across Africa that South African medicine man, if you will, went around collecting legends from various indigenous peoples in various parts of Africa, and they all talked about this reptoid teacher that came and told them things about the stars and themselves. So that is a real thing all over the globe.
Do you subscribe to the sort of the theory, the more that you read about the complexity of our interactions with these different star people? And that could be everything from, it could be military, it could be people that are really good at channeling, that have maybe had a telepathic connection to a particular entity or group. There starts to get a pattern where you see that some ET entities are just some are very, maybe perhaps pro-humanity, and are looking to help us integrate into a more galactic, you know, future. And there might be some that are looking to enslave humanity some more, longer, let's say, and are not looking, are looking to continue to deceive us. Like you had alluded to earlier, that the CIA had to run this disinformation. Well, if the CIA is a three-letter agency for ETs that want to cover up disclosure, it makes all the sense in the world. So do you see groups that are trying to help us come into more of a cosmic or galactic place in the cosmos, and then there's maybe ones that are trying to suppress it, only use the technology for their own gain, whether that's power, space power, money, whatever, and trying to keep us plebs sort of not seeing the picture of that clearly, or not even understanding our true history?
No, I don't subscribe to that. Mm-hmm. That is disinformation. That is propaganda that's been spread, that there are bad ETs coming, and that you should, if you see one, you should run the other way. The three-letter agencies have been putting out that propaganda for decades and decades, almost all the way back to Roswell.
Why are they doing that, though?
Because one of the ways they don't want the American people, let's just pick that group, to cozy up to the star people, because the star people are quite capable and do. I've worked with hundreds of experiencers you've had visit, are, you know, tell people what they know. And the intelligence agencies don't want the average person to know some stuff that they could find out from the star peoples. So they want to keep this wall of fear up. Another aspect is that the power brokers that tend to pull the levers behind our government and society. Deeply covet the hugely advanced technology that the star people have and sometimes show and talk about with people. So they try to discourage that. That's a kind word. Mm-hmm. More than kind, discourage. They sometimes take very strenuous measures to keep people from meeting with star folks. So reading the legend of the evil alien invader is one of their stock tools, because it, if they can get that idea into people's heads, people, they see a UFO land, they don't run towards it, they run away from it. And that way the inner circle folks get to keep all the technology for themselves.
It doesn't seem like it's working very well to me, because there's most of the people that I talk to are very excited about the possibility of the truth around our interactions and our collaborations with ET races and star people. So I don't think this kind of CIA driven disinformation, you know, fear tactic seems to be working all that well. Now, maybe it is on some level of society, but almost everybody I talk to, people seem kind of matter of fact that they almost are like, yeah, I assume we are collaborating. I assume with everything I'm seeing that we are already collaborating with star people, probably multiple races. Some may have our best interest, some maybe not. But almost everybody I talk to, and it's people from all across, all different, you know, working class, white collar, tech, non-tech, like most of the people I think are like, yeah, I think I've looked into it, and I think we definitely are collaborating, and I don't think we know the full story about Roswell or any of the other stuff that's gone on. That seems to almost be the base level of consciousness right now that I can see. I don't know what you're hearing, but I don't think this kind of keep them in the dark and keep them afraid of ETs, I don't think most people are in that camp anymore. Do you?
Well, it used to be more effective earlier decade.
Yeah.
When it was a big segment of our society that wasn't really up on things. And
that's true.
It was more superstitious. Now, of course, with things like Star Trek and various presentations on people who see this stuff on their TVs all the time, and it gets the wheels in their head turning.
Yeah.
Heck, why shouldn't there be people out there, and why shouldn't they come and talk?
What?
And actually, I have information that certain star people are working with elements in our government. One individual is a kind of semi-stable consultant to the National Security Council.
Mm-hmm.
There's a race of scientific people from Altair Aquila who work with some of our aerospace programs that are building copycat UFOs, anti-gravity craft, and giving them technical guidance so they'll have some success with that.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, there are star people working with elements of our government to slowly bring us along towards a more advanced level.
Well, then you see like a Space Force getting created, you know, you start to think we may be very close. I was talking to somebody, I wanted to ask you about this, but I think when I was younger and people talked about disclosure, you know, that we could see disclosure of our involvement with star people in our lifetimes as something that everybody knows, right? The mass disclosure. And I think when I was younger, I thought it would maybe happen in a really dramatic fashion. I don't know what I was picturing, you know, Ronald Reagan saying, you know, this is good, whatever in my young mind I thought a mass disclosure would be. But I was talking to somebody and they were saying, well, aren't we already in a soft disclosure? In other words, that all the things you and I are talking about, and this kind of not just Star Trek and things like Star Wars or all the movies that we've consumed and the mythologies we've consumed, all the whistleblowers that have come out and said, you know, these things are already happening. Dr. Sala's books, just all the people, like I had mentioned, the people that are very matter of fact about, you know what, I think we are already collaborating. And then you had like, I remember, I don't know if you remember this, it was the former defense minister of Canada. This has been maybe 10 or 15 years ago. And he was in front of his own parliament saying, we already know the major Western governments are collaborating with multiple ET races. We know that the United States government, we have the papers, we have all the declassified or the classified documents. We already know all this stuff. When are they going to start telling the truth about it and just start telling the world what's actually really going on? And so you have that kind of stuff, which leads me to that maybe disclosure is just going to be this kind of drip, drip, drip in our lifetime. It's never going to be something massively dramatic. We just all kind of get used to it. And then all of a sudden we're like, oh, look, here's this world leader, this maybe a U.S. president or some prime minister with some star, you know, a star person, a general of a starship that's here. And people are going to be like, oh, okay. Yeah, I thought that might be going on, but here it is definitely happening, and that it could all be done in a way that is maybe not as dramatic as I had imagined it to be, because when I was younger, the gulf in consciousness was quite extreme. In other words, you had mentioned, you know, the CIA did such a job on people that anybody talking about this stuff was a tinfoil wearing hat loony. So you had to kind of do your research and just kind of quietly do it. Now there's a million and one podcasts and websites talking about, you know, furthering the stuff that you had discovered and talking about you and everybody else involved in the space. And I guess my question is like, are we really already in a soft disclosure and this is what it looks like? And this may be what it looks like for the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years as this becomes more and more obvious what is really going on.
Oh, I think you're completely correct. The CIA has sort of plan A, plan B. Plan A is deny everything.
Yeah.
Let the rubes go pound sand. Plan B is, we'll put on these UFO conferences and have speakers like Paul Hellyer, the former major minister in Canada, who said UFOs are as real as the airplanes flying over your head.
Yep.
Paul and I were on friendly terms at one of these conferences. But those who our minds are open to learn things are picking this stuff up. And when finally there's a American president and a star person representative standing together in front of the camera on TV one night, some people are going to say, as you suggested, well, I knew this day was coming.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we're not alone.
Yeah. What has you most excited right now about everything that's going on? Like, is there a particular aspect of this ET awareness, disclosure, star people that has you kind of like, I'm looking forward to this? Or is there an aspect of it that has you most excited about humanity's future with all of these topics we talked about?
Yeah, I think what I'm most peaked on is that I have indication that some of these star teachers that our ancestors dealt with in the past are coming back. They're going to come back as a small group of about 7 folks. And it's going to be this year sometime. And they're going to go in public. I get the impression it'll be in front of TV cameras. It'd be something like when their ship lands, it's covered on television as an event.
Mm.
Maybe a couple of government high representatives will meet with them. I'd like to think of somebody like the director of intelligence or the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security, walking up and greeting them, you know, welcome to Earth, welcome to the U.S., sort of a thingy.
Yeah.
I think that day is within easy reach of all lifetimes of everybody listening to us.
That would be fantastic to see that at an actual like ceremony, diplomatic ceremony with, like you said, a high ranking military officer that is well respected. And I mean, I could see that happening. Yeah, it's super exciting right now. People are talking about it, maybe not front and center like you are, but it's definitely a hot topic right now for people as they wonder, you know. I think we've all been teased for quite a while. I know you probably feel this, that, you know, we've inched towards maybe a more dramatic, that would be a dramatic ceremony. You know, that's maybe more what I had in mind when I was younger, that it could be something that formal and obvious and stating to the world that this is, here's these people, they're friendly, this is what we've been doing, we're welcoming them, they have things that will help us in advanced technology. You know, one of the things I'm excited about, and I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but you always heard, you know, things like advanced, you know, free energy using almost like Tesla's principles, that maybe Tesla was plugged into some of these star people information to create, you know, a free clean energy for the planet. But also there's always this kind of urban myth around med beds, that there was that the star people possessed advanced technology thousands or maybe even tens of thousands or even millions of years ahead of us, and that they use some sort of technology where they can clean their cells of any kind of disease and stuff like that. And I didn't know if that was wishful thinking. It kind of makes sense. You see it a bit in Star Trek where they do the scan and then the person is, you know, back to health. And that would be fantastic for a planet that struggles with their health and struggles with all of the different toxins and the different systems that we live under that aren't super healthy. But so that's one of the things. I don't know if I'll see that in my lifetime or not. I would, that is something, as somebody that is interested in health, that I would be like, man, wouldn't that be something if we'd had a partnership? And one of the things is we got, you know, medicine from the future. That would be so great for the humans that live here, right?
Yeah. There are a couple of things I'm kind of glomming onto as I listen to you talk. The Zuni, when I visited them, did a sacred dance ritual. And what it was is they were reenacting when the star visitors came among them. And that has happened repeated times over the centuries. The Hopi, the same thing. The Zuni had this star dance they did. They lined up in a row and they moved their position so they resembled the stars of a constellation that the star came from. They kind of replicated that constellation diagram, if you will, in their dance positions. This is very alive stuff. And when the star people start staying on Earth for a while, the Hopi and the Zuni will just yawn, you know.
Yeah.
We knew all along.
Yeah.
But I've got something kind of breaking news. Of all people, the Catholic Church of the Vatican has just put out a document several weeks ago, Pope did, and it talks about star people. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you the direct language from this message from the Vatican. Evolved worlds are in the stars are going to send beings to descend and help human evolution, it will be for the benefit of all of society, and will help us move to a culture that is beyond warfare and moving to a great society that is not exploitative.
This was put out by the Pope.
That's pretty radical stuff for a stuffy organization like the Catholic Church to put out. But that is a position paper I've seen that hasn't been put widely out yet, but it's coming. So there are cultures, little pockets here and there on Earth that are primed for this, are ready, and that's the kind of reception the star people want. Or they come, they don't want to say, boo, here I am. Mm-hmm. They want a warm and understanding reception.
Of course. Yeah, I remember hearing from multiple, just like being down the rabbit hole and researching stuff, that the Vatican Library had a lot of information about star people and ETs, and that, which makes sense. That they would. They used to control a lot of the world's libraries, and they also went into these different indigenous tribes, different indigenous areas to do mission work. And it would make sense, being the most powerful, being the big guy on the block, that they would gather a lot of myth and information, maybe even written books and tablets and stuff like that, and that would become part of their library. So I was always kind of curious. It's interesting that you said that they're making kind of these statements now, as we're talking about disclosure, that here comes the Vatican saying, hey, we feel like this is going to really benefit humanity. That's super exciting sign of the times, I think.
Not one of the first organizations on Earth you think would lead the vanguard, but
no.
I think they may have some information that is not widely known yet, that the star folks are coming and they're trying to soften the beachhead with her spiritual followers to be mentally ready when it happens.
That's great. I agree. Well, Richard, thanks so much for coming on to Base Camp for Men, sharing. It's so great to talk to you. I just, you have so many stories and insight and wisdom. I just really appreciate it. Where do people find you if they want to plug in to what you're doing? Do you have anything you'd like to tell our listeners about, and, like a website or whatever that you got going on that you'd like our listeners to click on?
Yeah, sure. Let me say that a lot of the stuff we talked about today is alluded to on my website. I've dedicated it entirely to Star Nations, which is their name for their collection of intelligent civilizations in the universe. And you'll find information on there about the various races, what they look like, where they come from, what star systems each are in, and what I've worked with hundreds of people who've had close encounters with them, and what they have to say. Also the human side, how that is affected us. A lot of the jumps in our technology are not just somebody waking up with a bright idea one morning.
Right.
People have been given little dollops of advanced information from the ETs during visits. And a lot more of that's going to happen. That's why the Vatican letter said that we're looking forward to it. The visitors coming back and helping us move the whole society to a much more advanced level where we don't need to be engaging in exploitative, extractive kinds of industries and so forth, that we can have a beautiful society where everybody's needs are met and there's no more need for fighting over things. And they're trying to get people mentally prepared for that, and that the star people are going to try and help us get from here to there.
I love it. The new golden era, it sounds like. I'm ready for it.
Yeah.
I'm wanting to see it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much. And what's the name of the website? Where can people click and find the description? Yeah.
www.drboylan, and that's drboylan.com.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Boylan. I really appreciate your time and your energy and all of your insight. Thanks for making time for us today. Really appreciate it.
You bet, Tony. Best of luck to you.
Thank you. Well, I hope you enjoyed our time with Dr. Boylan as much as I did. I love sitting around the fire with a wise elder asking questions. It's how we preserve our human wisdom and dignity amongst all the transhumanist AI technology that they keep throwing at us. In my eyes, it will always be storytelling, myth, and shared meaning that lift the human race to our next epoch. Thank you, base campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors, and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.